Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Jen Waite, who is an aspiring actress working in New York City when she met, married, and had a daughter with her best friend and the love of her life. Jen had found her fairy tale romance, but as with all fairy tales, the story was only make-believe because Jen's prince turned out to have deeply dysfunctional and destructive personality disorder that tore her world apart and turned everything she thought she knew about herself and love upside down. Jen went through months and months of grief, despair, anger, shock, depression, and then even more anger. She suffered long and deep, but out of the suffering came wisdom and insight as she was born again emotionally and spiritually from the experience. Jen can now say that marrying and having a baby with her ex-husband was the best thing that ever happened to me because it opened me up to a truth I never knew existed, the truth that I was always whole to begin with and that everything I ever needed was already within me. Jen wrote her book, A Beautiful, Terrible Thing, in the hope that her memoir chronicling her painful, dysfunctional relationship can help others get to the other side of a similar painful relationship for them as well. Jen Waite, welcome. I'm so excited to have you on our show today. What a book. I read every bit of it and was just mesmerized because it is, unfortunately today, an all too familiar story. So welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you about it.
Well, it is, I'm sure it is an excitement that is born out of some recovery because yes. You've had quite a time of it. You know, as we shared during the pre-interview, this is a story that is happening more and more and more today. Because it seems, and you probably know more than me, you've probably done so much research on it, that we're dealing with a country, a community, a collective mentality that unfortunately includes some very serious hurtful behavior and some serious, what some would call mental illness. Do you want to start us off by talking about what you learned about the love of your life and your best friend that you met when you were in New York City working in the theater and modeling and acting industry? What happened and what did you run into as a result of your journey?
Mm-hmm. Well, just to, you know, give you a brief kind of synopsis or at least the tip of the iceberg that spurred me to write the memoir is that about 3 weeks after giving birth to my daughter and being married, you know, to the love of my life and my best friend and someone that I truly did trust, I sat down at my computer and opened up our home computer that we shared, and my husband's email account was logged in on the screen, which was pretty normal. And I just kind of scanned the screen, and one email popped out at me, and the subject line was appointments. And the reason that it popped out at me is because I could see the first line of the email thread, as you can when you see your email screen, and it said, "Thank you for your time last week, but my girlfriend and I have decided to go with another apartment." And so that was the very, you know, very tip of the iceberg. You would think that that might be the whole story, but from there it kind of spun out, and I just started to uncover more and more lies, and basically found out that the person that I thought I knew for 5 years really never existed. And so I did start doing a lot of research. Eventually I left New York with my baby and went home to Maine where I had grown up. And once, you know, well, the shock really didn't settle for quite a while, but once I got settled in there, I started to do research and reading and Googling. And I remember one of the first things I Googled was husband affair personality change overnight. And I started to research different types of pathological lying, and it brought me to, narcissistic personality disorder and psychopathy and cognitive dissonance and gaslighting and all of these terms that I was writing the book in 2016, really like the beginning of 2016. And these were not, you know, it's crazy because now I feel like we read articles every day almost with about, you know, narcissists or the everyday psychopath or cognitive dissonance. Gaslighting is like a huge like buzzword now. But just a couple years ago, they really weren't, or at least they weren't on my radar. And so I started researching and discovering that my ex-husband really checked off a lot of the personality traits, really all of the personality traits of all of those disorders, but specifically psychopathy. And so that's when I knew that I was not just dealing with, you know, cheating or an affair. It became clear to me that it was something much more than that.
Mm-hmm. So you open up your computer screen and you see that your husband has emailed a real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
And the communication was, well, my girlfriend and I have decided we're going another route.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from your husband to a real estate agent. So you must have been totally baffled, completely like, what?
And I remember laughing out loud because I was so confused and it didn't make any sense. And I think I laughed almost as a defense mechanism because I wanted to just tell myself that it was so ridiculous. It must be a misunderstanding, or why is he calling me his girlfriend? Like, maybe he forgot. Maybe he's really sleep deprived too and, you know, suffering from hormones just like I am. And so I kind of laughed and tried to brush it off a little bit, I think, in my own head. But I couldn't, obviously, and felt really sick to my stomach at the same time. But what happened next is really what sent me down this rabbit hole, because it wasn't just a straightforward, okay, yes, this is what happened. I had an affair, and I need to do some work on myself, or let's work on our marriage. He was absolutely genuine and laughed it off and gave me a very, what I thought at the time was a believable story, and was really laughed, like his genuine goofy laugh, and said, oh my gosh, this, you know, you're not going to believe this. A young coworker who didn't have papers came into my office and was sobbing. She couldn't get any brokers to take her seriously, and she's couch surfing and she can't find an apartment. So I just gave him a quick call and said, can you show my girlfriend, you know, some apartments? I'm a restaurant owner and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I really totally believed him at that point that it was a misunderstanding. But then he said, the real problem, though, is that I have been sick for a very long time and I didn't tell you. And I'm looking at you and I feel absolutely nothing. And I haven't felt emotions or feelings for months now, but I didn't want to stress you out during your pregnancy. And it was like his whole persona changed completely and I had no idea who I was looking at. And that's when everything kind of started to spiral downwards from there.
I remember reading in the book, it was as if you were on to the game, right? You were on to the game.
Mm-hmm.
So now he had to come up with something
mm-hmm.
to allow behavior to change.
Mm-hmm.
He could have different behavior, and that
mm-hmm.
you could kind of get on board with it in the sense of saying, well, gee, you know, he's got this problem, and so that's why he's acting that way, or that's why he's doing that thing, correct? So how long was he able to get away, you know, with that cover-up, so to speak, of the illness? How long did that go on?
Well, a few months, and it was, or at least a month, and it was really brilliant because I think, I'm just realizing this now as we're speaking, but I would have so much rather believed that he was sick than that he was having an affair. So, you know, it was actually really brilliant tactic for him because I wanted to believe anything but that he was having an affair. And also, like you said, it provided this, you know, he became this other person, but there was this reason for it that also made him a victim in a lot of ways, and because he was sick and he had a problem. So there was a good month where I was trying to help him and figure out what was wrong with him, and I was just filled with this really unfocused sense of dread and anxiety because I wanted to save him. And I eventually came to the conclusion, and with the help of my parents and his parents at this point, we were all, you know, madly trying to figure out what was wrong with him. And, you know, he's suddenly this person who we need to save. And we decided that he was suffering from burnout, which sounds innocuous, but it's actually can be really serious if you are medically burned out. And so, you know, we all decided that that was what was wrong with him, and we really all wanted to believe it, I think. But at the same time, I had just this feeling in the pit of my stomach telling me that there was something wrong. And like my grandmother has now told me, I think she said, your stomach always knows. And I so believe that now, because it really was just in the pit of my stomach that just something did not add up. And so at the same time as wanting to believe that he was just sick and burned out and that it was this total misunderstanding that, you know, just was a complete coincidence but had nothing to do with anything, I started to dig. And that's when I really found a lot more evidence of an affair and really just a completely different person that I, you know, than I thought I knew.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting, as you said, this was not common. This was not common 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It's as if, like everything else, doesn't there seem to be a cycle to what happens and to the awareness of what happens and consciousness? It's as if the consciousness of our society has kind of shifted a little bit. And if we look around at our culture and we look around at some of the politics and things that are going on out there, it's easy to see that the country we were 40 years ago, with our sense of integrity and honesty and all of this stuff, that that isn't quite what's going on today. That there to be an abandonment. There's a lot more self-absorption, self-centeredness. We're more worried about instant gratification. We're more concerned about our needs as opposed to our responsibilities and our commitments. So this is not that completely unusual in this moment in time. It was very different from, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. So you've had this terrible situation. You know, you confront this email, and he comes up with this incredibly, somebody once said to me, narcissists are some of the most creative people you'll ever meet. Came up with this really kind of brilliant story, you know, saying...
like on his toes pretty much, too, unless he had been thinking that he might get caught. But yeah, he, you know, it was completely genuine and very believable. Of course, I also wanted to believe it because I had a newborn baby and was really terrified of being a single mom at that point. I just wanted, before I forget, I do get a lot of messages from women who, you know, this happened to or something similar a long time ago, and they say in their messages that it wasn't talked about and you just didn't talk about it. And so I completely agree with your assessment that narcissism, I think, is just growing in general. But I also think it's kind of twofold because women especially did not talk about this type of betrayal. It was and still is almost like this shameful thing to talk about. So it's very interesting how the time that we're in right now.
Right, which leads us into the real meat and potatoes of our discussion, because you were so frank and honest and open and transparent and very generous to share with the audience some of the things that you found out about yourself and some of the things that we understand as we go through experiences like this is what allows us to become enmeshed in a relationship like this. Your question, which was all of our questions for anyone who's had anything like this happen. And even for men, men have had this happen to them too. It's not just women, predominantly women, but men too. Why did this happen to me? How did I get involved in a situation like this? Like, what did I do wrong? Where did I go wrong? What didn't I understand? What do I need to know? There are so many questions. And for you, it was really powerful because you said, yeah, what you came to understand is that you were the co-author of this relationship, and that what you wanted, what you were looking for, which was to be loved and adored, you were looking for the fairy tale romance, and you realized that that was the bait that was within you that hooked you into what's called the love bombing that he provided for you so that you could fall madly in love with what appeared to be him, but it was really yourself you fell in love with.
Exactly. No, there was a long period of shock and grief and anger, and it wasn't necessarily linear, but there was a long period of that, and then I got to the period of self-examination, which even after everything that I had experienced, I think the self-examination part was the most, you know, one of the most or the most uncomfortable parts but if I hadn't done that work, I think I would still be stuck. And so that work of really just going to some dark places within myself and, you know, figuring out what was seductive about that type of person and why was I drawn to him and what insecurities in myself or issues, you know, in myself and false constructs and lack of boundaries and lack of self-worth. It was a lot of self-examination, and I had a really amazing therapist to kind of help me through it, and she didn't push me before I was ready, which I think is really important because I think you really do have to be ready and want to understand. The messages that I get, it's very clear to me there's almost two camps of people. You know, the people who are kind of stuck in, I hate to put it like this, but the victimhood, you know, kind of just stuck in the victimhood label. And then the people who have done this kind of transformative, like, inner work that have emerged and now feel more powerful and more fully formed than ever before. And so for me, doing that self-work and figuring out, you know, what was it that drew me to this person, I think that was ultimately what set me free. It wasn't learning, you know, for the 15th time what my husband's double life, you know, was made up of. It was not those details. It was looking into myself.
Exactly. We have, hard to believe, we've come to the first commercial break. I mean, this is such a fascinating topic. When we come back, let's dive a little bit deeper and talk about this, because what you said is, look, in situations like this, people suffer. They suffer deeply. They can suffer as a victim and blame and be angry, or they can suffer doing the self-reflection and doing the deeper inner work. But it's a process, and you had mentioned, you know, life is one big classroom. So when we come back, let's talk some more about you, who you were. Who was Jen Waite at the time that you met this man who you were completely charmed and enamored with? And what was it about you, what was it about the situation that allowed you to fall so in love that you couldn't see the writing on the wall? So, listeners, don't go away. This is an important conversation, and I hope not too many of you can relate to this, but we will be back very shortly with Jen Waite.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. by learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donatio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donatio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
We are back with Jen Waite, who wrote the international best-selling book, A Terrible, Beautiful Thing. It's a memoir of marriage and of betrayal. Jen, before the break, we were talking about where were you, what was going on in your heart and in your life, and you very generously said it was about being adored. It was about being chosen. It was about you having this gorgeous man who other women would look at and say, oh, wow, you know, isn't she lucky? She got him. And it was kind of like, it's kind of like the thing that, if we're being honest, if women are being honest with ourselves, we all want to be the princess who gets chosen by the prince. So here you are, and the audience can't see you, but well, they can't see you right now, but when they go on your bio page, they will. But you are an absolutely stunning woman who is very attractive, and I'm sure received lots of affirmation of that growing up. And here you were, you got the prince. So talk to us about what you discovered was going on for you at that time.
Oh, this is hard. And just to note that I have not reread the memoir yet, because when I wrote all of this stuff, I was almost writing in real time, and it was so raw, and I really put it all out there. So I haven't really been able to go back and read it, because like you were saying, it's the most kind of vulnerable, dark part of myself that I just laid out on the page. So I think in hindsight, I can say this. At the time, there was no way that I would have described myself like this. I would have been very defensive and, you know, fought tooth and nail to argue against it. But I can say that in hindsight, I really derived all of my self-worth from what other people thought of me, and especially a romantic partner. I had had a boyfriend pretty much since the age of 15 and a long-term relationship. And I really kind of built my identity around, you know, my romantic partner instead of it coming from within. And so I looked to my ex-husband as the ultimate kind of win, or, you know, we talk about narcissists and psychopaths getting narcissistic supply, but I also was getting some supply from him and feeling like he was validating me by choosing me. In reality, I was just getting a, I don't know how to phrase this. I thought I was getting a prize, but I was actually getting just kind of a big piece of crap, basically. And, but at the time I thought, oh, he is choosing me and, I'm so special and he adores me and he really sees me, for the first time. And that felt very powerful and very seductive. And also, anyone who has, you know, been in this type of relationship will know that the love bombing is very seductive, and it feels really good, and you want to believe it. Even though I had this little voice in my stomach, once again, that was telling me something was a little bit off, I ignored it and really blinded myself to a lot of the red flags because I wanted to believe in this, like, fairy tale narrative.
Sure. I want to read something from the book. I read the whole book. I read every sentence. I don't get to read all the books that for the people that I interview, but your book, I couldn't put it down. Just like it says, you can't put it down. It says, I think back to the person I was when I met Marco. I was desperate for external validation. I needed someone to tell me I was special so I could believe it myself. I decided that Marco was my missing piece, and because of his love, I would finally be whole. I wanted so badly to feel the magic of love, to be adored, to find my fairy tale ending, to be complete, even when I found out that Tanya was still in the picture, which was a girlfriend, right? I convinced myself that Marco and I were soulmates, that we were destined to be together, and that Tanya was just an obstacle we had to overcome. Rather than seeing Marco's bad behavior as a major character flaw, I justified Marco's cheating and lying as a means to an end, the end being us together forever, happily ever after.
Oh, God.
And your therapist, Lisa, said a very, very interesting thing. She said, honestly, do you really think that a mature woman who had an ounce of self-respect would want to be involved with a married man whose wife is 9 months pregnant? What does that say about him? What does that say about this woman he was with? So you, like many of us, and, you know, I've been there myself, and I bet you a lot of people listening to this program have been too. We want to deceive ourselves. We want to hold on desperately to that fantasy, to that dream. And what we talked about, you know, as we went into the pre-interview, is that basically this is a big classroom, this thing called Earth, you know. And we're here to learn, no matter how many times it takes, for us to learn to really step back and allow the ego not to create something that isn't there. And you were saying it felt like life or death to you, that you had to have this relationship, you know, that this was part of your inherent desire, maybe, to be an actress. Maybe it was a symptom in some way. So why don't you talk to us about that, you know, about how you came to discover this whole other meaning to your life through this relationship?
Yeah, I think that one of the kind of greatest aspects of this whole experience was learning so much about myself as a person. And something that Lisa helped me with to see, because oftentimes it is very hard to see it yourself when you're kind of in the thick of it, is that I looked at the world as black and white, and I didn't really leave a lot of room for that gray area. And so I saw Marco, or my relationship with him, as a black and white thing, and like a life or death. Right in the very first few weeks, it was life or death, you know, that's what it felt like to me. And I already had it in my mind, this whole narrative of what we were. Like, we were the fairy tale. I was the special one, you know, the 1% that ends up with her Prince Charming. And I would do basically anything to enable that narrative in my mind, including kind of seeing a lot of this not so great behavior from him and throwing it out the window because it didn't fit in with my paradigm. Mm-hmm. And so I have now, you know, learned, and I hope that this is my biggest learning lesson. I don't know. I almost feel like the more I know, the less I know at this point, but I hope that I don't have another humongous learning experience like the one that I had. But through this experience, I've just kind of relaxed a lot, and I see things in more of these shades of gray now. And, you know, instead of building up my expectations right away, I instead look at the data as objectively as possible, which of course, especially in a romantic relationship, is easier said than done. But it's true, like you were saying, there are so many of us who will deceive ourselves in order to kind of believe what we want to believe, or to fit that paradigm of happily ever after. And it's really crazy, because you can see so clearly when someone else is doing it or when a friend is doing it, but when you yourself, you know, are being deceptive in that way, it's very easy to do, because it's really terrifying to let go and potentially have to start over, and, you know, have your world kind of be shattered. And so now I kind of try to tell people that just see the data as objectively as possible. And there are so many opportunities in life. I mean, that isn't something else that this experience has taught me. I used to think that if I didn't get something, whatever it was, like career or, I don't know, anything socially or in a romantic relationship, if I didn't get that certain something that I wanted, it was over. Like, it was just done. That was the end of the world. And now I can see so clearly that that's just not true for anyone. You know, there will always be more opportunities. And if something doesn't feel right, then just disengage. Like, trust your intuition and trust that little voice in your stomach. And the more you do it, the easier it will get. It's almost like a muscle that you have to work.
Wow. So for you, this has been quite the workout. It's been quite
yes.
quite an understanding. What I said in the introduction is that, you know, you have been kind of reborn again, because everything that you thought you knew about life, everything you thought you knew about love, has been mm-hmm. totally changed. And
exactly.
I found out a few things. We talked about being, you have a daughter. We talked about being pretty. I have a young daughter, and she's very beautiful. And watching what happens to women when we grow up with this expectation that you are beautiful or pretty or cute or adorable, and that's what you're valued for. That mm-hmm. and you were talking about that, like you see this with your daughter, and this is how we begin to objectify ourselves, saying, well, I'm pretty, or I'm attractive, or I'm this, or I'm that, and I deserve this, or I should have that, and I deserve it. Maybe somebody else doesn't. And we were talking about, like, concerns about that. Like, it seems to be very germane to women in our culture. Do you want to talk to that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a huge part of it. And having a daughter myself, even though she's only 3 years old, I notice it all the time, and I try to counteract it by kind of overemphasizing to her, oh, you're smart, you're brave, you're powerful, because even at the age of three, you know, as compared to her four-year-old male cousin, she's constantly being told that she's pretty and cute and beautiful, and you know, it's with good intentions, and they're lovely people who are saying this, but it is very evident already that she's being taught that her currency is her looks. And I think that we learn that as women from a very young age, that we should value ourselves based on our beauty or lack of beauty. And that's kind of our currency in the world of how we can pay our way, I guess, through the world. And it's, I mean, that had a lot to do, I think, with how I saw myself and, you know, wanting to be validated by that male gaze. Because from a very young age, I had internalized that was the most important thing. Like, I could be smart and successful in my career, but the number one thing I had been taught, and not even necessarily by my parents, it's really society in general, that the number one thing is you will be complete, like, on your wedding day, that, you know, with a partner and your other half, your soulmate, you know. And so I think that that's just a concern for me as I'm raising a daughter. And I think as a parent of a young girl, I mean, people are speaking about it more and more, so hopefully things are shifting, but it's just something that I'm very aware of now, because it's a dangerous trap to fall into. And if you go through life, you know, only deriving your worth from how other people see you, then you really have nothing to stand on yourself, and you end up crumbling very easily. So I'm definitely...
This is one of the problems with people like Marco, because deep down inside, you know, they have to create a false reality in order to feel that, and they have to have multiple people adoring them and loving them, and the deception and all of that. So we can see the pathology that can arise out of not really valuing yourself for who you are and how you live. One of the things I do want to bring up, because believe it or not, we're heading towards another commercial break. here's the conflicting thing. In reality, we really do have an innate biological primordial urge and drive towards coupling with another. This is a real human thing. It's across the board. It doesn't matter age, race, gender, none of it matters. We are drawn and driven to partnering with a significant other. So that's a very real thing. And on some level, that becomes part of our, if we're doing it right, it becomes part of our emotional and spiritual development. You know, how do I live with another? How do I love another? How do I partner with another person? How do I grow? So on one hand, we're being told that in a very kind of, you know, fairy tale way, but there is truth there. And on the other hand, there's so much that has to be unpacked about that. So this is a very difficult terrain, I think, for all of us to transverse. I will tell you that I'm much older, certainly much older than you are, and I am dating at my tender age, which is really up there. I'm a senior, senior. And I want to tell you, I talk to men and women, because I have women friends, and I talk to a lot of my clients and the people I interview. Everybody, without exception, expresses, whether they're 80 or 70 or 20 or 40, expresses a desire to be in partnership, in a loving partnership that fills them and grows them as people. So this is the problem when we're talking about a subject like this. If this man had been healthy, you know, this may not have been a bad thing, okay? But given the dynamics that you felt you had a whole in your soul without him in your life, and the fact that he was pathological, the ideal, and I think this is important to point out, because personally, I don't think there's anything greater on the planet than love. The act of love, not the thought of love, but the action of love, the giving of love, the beauty and the tenderness and the ethics of love. But we confuse that, as you did and as I have and as so many of us have done. We confuse that, right, with a fairy tale.
Right. So no, exactly. And I now think that a real healthy, long-term love, to me, I mean, that is such a courageous, brave act. And I never thought of it that way before. And I'm not necessarily ready, or I don't necessarily know what that looks like for myself. So I'm trying to be honest about that with myself and, you know, take my time and not rush into anything. But now I see how just courageous it is and how difficult in reality, or maybe difficult's not the right word, but that it takes so much work to have that real, you know, healthy, loving, long-term relationship. It's I'm almost in awe of it now, and I used to think it was so easy, and now I really understand.
Well, now we know why the President of the United States will send a congratulations to a couple when they reach their 50th wedding anniversary.
Oh, wow.
I have my mother and father sitting on my desk. At the time, it was President Clinton who was in office. And all people who reach their 50th wedding anniversary, if somebody lets the White House know, they will congratulate you, because it's like the movie The Notebook. Loving and living are profoundly challenging things. And so when a person has an experience like yours, it's important to talk about it, because it's very essential in understanding the big picture. We're at a commercial break. We're going to come back, and we will have a bunch of time left. And if we can talk some more about all of the things that has brought you to this very, you're in a good place now. You're in a good place, and you're moving forward with your life. You've had some nicks and bangs and some damage, you know, because you talked about, you know, that previously in the pre-interview. But when we come back, we'll talk about how you got where you are, which is a wonderful story, and what your gift and what your message is to the listeners. So don't go anybody. We're coming back again with Jen Waite.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
And we are back again with the international best-selling author, Jen Waite, who wrote A Beautiful, Terrible Thing. It's a story and a memoir of marriage and betrayal. Jen, before the break, we were talking about what you learned. You know, I mean, you and I were talking, and you said, yeah, life has kind of humbled you. And I use the word broken. There's an old expression, life breaks everybody. Life humbles us. It kind of brings us to our knees. So tell us about that humbling and about that huge transformation that you've gone through.
Yeah, I think it broke me in many, many pieces. But the really amazing thing is that I was given the chance as an adult to rebuild myself kind of from the ground up. And so it was very humbling and a very ultimately positive, you know, transformational experience. But I do get so many messages, and a lot of the messages end with, you know, what can I do? What should I do? Help me. And it's like these women want, and I wanted, I remember just wanting someone to tell me what to do, like how to heal. And it's complicated, and it takes a lot of time. And for me, it was really just kind of being in an uncomfortable place for a long time and kind of breaking myself down and getting rid of a lot of false beliefs or just things that I believed that I didn't even really know why I believed them. I think I just internalized them from a young age, you know, for whatever reason, and kind of building myself back up, building my self-worth back up, pretty much, you know, the foundation of it. I didn't really have a foundation. And just really kind of tackling my own insecurities and vulnerabilities and issues. I kind of talked about one before, the big one, deriving my self-worth from other people or from a partner. And then, you know, other ones that I really had to kind of take a magnifying glass and turn it around and examine myself, that I really thought of myself as an optimist, and that's kind of how I put it, and I thought that was a good thing. But through therapy, really discovered that I filtered out data that I didn't want to see in order to kind of fit my own version of the story. And so kind of just letting, like, really being more vulnerable, actually, I'm realizing, was key for me, letting more information in and trusting myself to make those decisions and determinations of what didn't feel good and then disengage, and, you know, doing that over and over again. But it did take a really long time. And so what I try to tell other people who are, you know, going through similar situations or just out or, you know, a year out or 2 years out or whatever that feel stuck is to, first of all, to be really gentle with yourself because it is a really long process. And, you know, rebuilding yourself like that is physically and emotionally draining. But then when you are ready to do that inner work and to look inwards and to figure out how am I holding myself back? And, you know, what are these kind of lies that I've been telling myself pretty much for my whole life? And I don't think a lot of people realize how terrifying that is to do that work and dissect, you know, these kind of false beliefs that you've had for your whole life, because once you do that, it's very scary. You almost feel like you're free falling because, you know, who are you?
Yes.
If everything is shattered. But ultimately, once I rebuilt kind of my reality, I have so much more. I mean, I have so much more trust in myself. It was there from the beginning. I had just lost touch with it, but now I just feel this power that I think everyone has. You just have to kind of find it.
Well, you said some powerful things when we were talking. You said that you were determined to fit the narrative. You were very willful, and that you would have found someone like Marco eventually, mm-hmm. that the dark places in yourself was the drive for the self-adoring, the self-adoration experience, mm-hmm. and that you came to see yourself as, you know, kind of co-authoring what happened. I mean, he needed someone like you for him to fit. It's like a socket, you know, and a plug.
Oh yeah.
We need to fit together. So one of the things that's so important to all of us, I had to go through this when I came through my very long and very dysfunctional marriage, was to see how I was enabling that relationship and what I was getting out of it and what I wanted out of it. And the bottom line for all of us is we really get hooked on falling in love with ourselves. Jerry Seinfeld, on one of his shows, he meets this woman who's just like him, and he says, "I swept myself off my feet." And that's what we do, right? We meet someone like a Marco, and they say things to us like, the classical lines, "I've never met anyone like you. You're different from anyone else. You're so special. I'll never meet anyone like you again. I do love you. You know, I'm not sure." Like sometimes they'll give you the line that they're not sure, you know, what's going on in their life, if they're playing you. Some of them are playing, and so they have to throw that in. But we get caught up on all of that wonderful fairy tale, "You're the fairest princess in the land" stuff. And the fact that we can talk about this on the air is so generous of you and powerful for the listener to say, you know what, maybe I'm in that bad marriage or maybe I'm in that bad relationship because he or she says to me, "Oh, you know, I'll never meet anybody like you, David. I'll never meet anybody like you, Ellen," you know, and we want that. We so very much want that. You also made a comment. You said that you were drawn to the unhealthy. And so we know that water seeks its own level. There's nothing wrong.
Right.
And it's very powerful to say, and how brave you are to say, "I was unhealthy."
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, a healthy person with healthy boundaries and a healthy sense of self-worth would have gone on one date with Marco and been like, a peace out. There's no way that if I had a healthy sense of self-worth and boundaries, I would have pursued someone like that. And that was a very humbling, almost embarrassing realization for me to make, that I really did pursue it. I went after it, you know, hard. Just as much as he was love bombing me, I was right there with him, just thinking I have to have this person who, you know, has taken me on this emotional roller coaster and made me feel the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. I have to get this prize. And you know, anyone really with a healthy set of boundaries would have seen the red flags from a mile away. And so that was something that I also had to spend a long time working on and developing my own set of boundaries, which I didn't even really know what those were before. And trusting myself that, you know, if someone does show you kind of who they are, as they say, I think Oprah said that, if someone shows you who they are, believe them and just disengage. And it's easier said than done, but it's simple, but it's not easy, I guess I should say, because you simply should just disengage. But of course, I guess where you are in your own personal growth will determine how easy that is for you.
Right. And as you said before, this is a big classroom. We're all here to learn.
Yes. So I have learned many lessons.
Sometimes we make these choices. Before we end, and we're so close to the end, I can't believe it. It went by so fast. Yeah, I know. You and I talked about dark angels and light angels. And I just want to say this because I think that there's a danger in vilifying human beings. People, none of us are perfect. Some of us have pathology. Some of us are very destructive in nature. Mm-hmm. And we can come across these destructive people, but we have to make no mistake that they are part of a reflection of ourselves. And so we have to see that there are light angels, those wonderful light angels who do all kinds of wonderful things for us and help us to understand things and navigate situations. And then there are dark angels, and they're doing the same thing, except what they do hurts. And what the light angels do usually feel pretty good. So I think it's important that we take a step back and say, look, in life, there's so much energy, yin and yang, opposites, the law of opposites, water seeks its own level, et cetera, et cetera. When we call someone like this into our life, it's because we need to learn, we need to know, and they're there to teach us. So in you summing up, what would you say, I know you haven't spoken in a very long time to Marco. If you had to say something to him now, three and a half years later, however long it is, what would you say to him from your growth and your experience?
Oh, gosh. I honestly don't think that I would say anything to him. I think I would say to other people going through something like this that if you can stay in that painful place, in that uncomfortable place, and just feel that, and don't, you know, try to repress it or try to mask it with whatever other unhealthy, you know, drinking or drugs or running into another relationship. If you can really just stay there in that uncomfortable place and sit there, you will be reborn. And it does take a long time, and it is very painful. But it really taught me who I was, and I came away, I think, a much deeper, more compassionate, really more empathetic person than I was before. And so to anyone who is, you know, experiencing this right now and can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, I know that it might not mean that much to hear it, because I know that when I was in that place, I couldn't really hear it. But just if it's enough to know that someone else has been there, and, you know, you just need to hang on, and you will get to the other side eventually.
Well, I just want to say, in closing, that you have been so courageous to share this with us. And you mentioned this, and I'm so excited to hear this. I think this should be either a made-for-TV movie or definitely a motion picture, because this is a story that doesn't end with the couple going off into the sunset, but it ends with you and your daughter, you and yourself, looking back and smiling and saying, this was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because now I Have Myself. It's a powerful story, Jen Waite. You are wonderful to come on and share your life and your process with us. So thank you. Thank you so much. And listeners, do not fail to come back next week for yet another amazing, powerful, educational, and inspiring story on Living Above the Drama.